This episode is brought to you by Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, giving ambitious companies like yours the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
There's a cat and mouse game playing out around what's perhaps your most important and personal device, your cell phone.
Tech companies keep coming up with ways to make your phone more secure. And as they do that, others like governments and hackers have been trying to figure out ways to get around it.
And this spring, someone figured out a new way to hack into a phone by exploiting what's supposed to be one of the most secure messaging platforms out there, WhatsApp. And all it took was a single call.
Today on the show, how 1,400 people got their phones hacked and how one company may have been behind it. Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Kate Linebaugh.
And I'm Ryan Knutson. It's Friday, November 8th.
Last year, I was at this conference for forensic investigators, people who are trying to get information off of computer devices in pursuit of law enforcement investigations.
Bob McMillan covers cybersecurity.
And they were telling me about how until around 2014, 2013, if there was an investigation going on, there was a suspected criminal activity and people were communicating, they had a way in. The best known way is wiretaps. They would get a court order and go to the phone company, and the phone company would allow them to listen in on phone conversations between suspected criminals.
But these forensic investigators told Bob that wiretaps were becoming much less effective because fewer people were using traditional phone calls and text messages to communicate. Instead, people were using new technology made by tech companies that enabled encrypted communications. Tech companies were making encrypted messaging apps so they could market themselves to consumers as being privacy first. And one of the companies leading the way on encrypted messages was WhatsApp.
WhatsApp built a very strong end-to-end encrypted messaging product that if a law enforcement agency goes to Facebook and says, we want to get access to data from a phone that's communicating via WhatsApp.
Because Facebook owns WhatsApp.
Yeah, that's right. WhatsApp would say, listen, we can give you a very limited amount of sort of what they call metadata, data about the data that's going on there. But we can't tell you what the text messages were. We can't tap into voice conversations that are happening. That's just not possible with this end-to-end encryption technology. And people who care about privacy and security, they know this. They know that that's sort of the go-to software that you want to use if you don't want anyone to be able to listen in.
But in May, WhatsApp users found out that something they hoped would never happen happened. WhatsApp said there was an opening in their software that had been letting hackers in.
Often when you see attacks in the computer world, there's often you have to click on something or there's some action that the user has to take. So there's like one final line of protection, right? If you get a message from somebody you don't know and it says, click on this right now, like most people know not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But this attack didn't work that way. It was better than that. The way the hack worked was all they had to do was get your phone number you were using for WhatsApp and call you using WhatsApp, you would see a strange number on your phone. Whether you answered it or not, you were hacked from the point you were called. From your phone's perspective, it was like, hey, there's a call coming in. That means you should pop up an alert. That means there should be like a little ringing sound. That means you should get ready for the mic to work and for a voice conversation. Oh, and by the way, you should also install the secret spy software. Like that's how it worked. In all that orchestration of what would happen in your phone when it started, they found a bug, a mistake that allowed them to get a foothold in your phone, which then allowed them to install software that wasn't supposed to be installed on your phone.
And what could that software, that spyware that just got installed, what could it actually do? What could it give the hacker access to?
It was game over. It could see the contents of your chats. It could screenshot browsing pages that you went to. It could see who you were calling.
This software could also turn on your camera and microphone and record audio and collect location data and even survive a factory reset of your phone. It wasn't clear who'd hacked into the phones, but when WhatsApp discovered the vulnerability, it rushed to figure out how the hack worked and how to fix it.
And as they started pulling at the technical string on this, they realized that a lot of people had been targeted.
Do you know how many people had been targeted?
WhatsApp says that 1,400 people in total have been targeted, and they made the decision to start notifying everybody. The way WhatsApp works is WhatsApp might not know much more than the number of the person that they're dealing with. They just sent messages via WhatsApp to all of the targets saying like, hey, you know, there's been a security incident. This is what we know. The integrity of your device has been compromised.
And they did this for 1,400 people.
That's right. Yeah.
There are a lot of possible motivations for this hack. It could have been rogue actors who wanted to steal people's information. It could have been law enforcement officers, like those people Bob had talked to, who wanted to look into criminal activity. Or it could have been autocratic governments who wanted to spy on political dissidents. Either way,
it basically burned all of these intel operations, right? If you let all these people know that they're the targets of surveillance and that there's software on their phone that's spying on what they do, they're going to get new phones, right? And so suddenly, whoever is doing the surveillance is going to have to start all over again to try and find out who they're talking to and what they're saying and what they're browsing on the internet.
You talked to one of those people, right? Right after they found out?
Yeah, that's right. I talked to a Moroccan national, a man in Aix-en-Provence, who is an administrator at a college there now. He had been a journalist in Morocco, and he was surprised to get the message. He wasn't involved in journalism anymore, and he didn't really think he was of interest to anyone. We had a conversation via WhatsApp, and one of the first things he said was, I hope you're comfortable with this call being recorded because I still am using the same phone and it's been compromised.
And what did you say?
I said, let's go. You know, it's good to know that that's the case.
But I'm on deadline and I've got to
I need to get
out.
Your story, man. Mm-hmm. I just hope I don't get scooped by like a national agency.
How did this man feel about what had happened to him?
Well, he was a little cynical. And he had done some journalism that the government of Morocco didn't like, and he had been the target of surveillance before. And so he said he just assumed that this was always the case with his phone.
Hmm.
It was interesting to get the confirmation, but he basically, if he had something really, really secret to talk about, he wouldn't be doing that via telephone or text message. He just didn't trust this stuff.
According to the human rights research group Citizen Lab, more than 100 of the targets were like this man, a journalist or a political dissident. And they were from all over the world, the UK, India, South Africa, Belgium, France, Uganda, and more, which suggested that some governments might have been involved. WhatsApp decided to respond to the hack. But how the company responded was unusual. Instead of going after the people orchestrating the attacks, it decided it was going to go after the creator of the software that made the attacks possible. That's after the break. Welcome back. WhatsApp says it knows who made the software used in the attacks.
A company called the NSO Group, which is an Israeli spyware company. The NSO Group has about 500 employees. They operate out of Israel. Some of these people are former Israeli intelligence. They make surveillance software that they sell to government and law enforcement agencies. And if you talk to the NSO Group, they say that this software is very useful for surveillance operations, especially for countries that maybe can't stand up the intense amount of research that would be required to find the kind of bug that we're talking about here. they also have investigations that they need to do. And so they want to be able to get past this end-to-end encryption as well. And so NSO Group is providing a way for them to do that. Now, NSO Group says that the vast majority of the use cases of their software are to combat terrorism and to catch child pornography creators and to get the bad people.
Last week, WhatsApp and its parent company, Facebook, made a big move against the NSO Group. They filed a civil lawsuit against the company, which is something that hadn't been done before. Usually, companies that get hacked just tell law enforcement what happened and leave it to them to investigate.
If you step back, the government here in the United States, the Department of Justice, has actually pursued a number of cases against private contractors who they allege have been helping out with nation-state spying. The Department of Justice calls this a name and shame campaign. The idea is that they will make these people pay through exposure. They at least will harm the public reputation of these companies and make it more difficult for them to do business with legitimate companies. It seems very much like WhatsApp and Facebook are trying the same tactic, but in a civil court. They're taking it upon themselves to do the same type of thing, to name and shame NSO Group.
But NSO Group was just the company that made this tool, that made this spyware. They weren't necessarily the ones that were doing the actual hacking?
That's a great point. NSO Group has said that over the years. They come back to this idea of, like, we just build these tools and it's our customers who are using them. But if you look at the WhatsApp complaint, they actually describe a much more active level of involvement from NSO Group. They describe them as running in the infrastructure and basically knowing who is being targeted by this. So from the WhatsApp Facebook perspective, it goes from you're not only providing the weapons, you're holding the weapon, you're loading the weapon, you're cleaning the weapon, and you're and you're sort of like holding the barrel of it and pointing it in a certain direction. So they make it sound like they're much more active in this than NSO Group would have people believe.
The NSO Group has disputed these allegations and says it only sells its software to governments as a tool to monitor criminals and terrorists, not critics. But this isn't the first time that people have pointed to NSO software in illegitimate attacks. In 2016, NSO software was used to surveil a human rights researcher in the United Arab Emirates. And other lawsuits against the company claim that NSO software has also been found on the phones of journalists and dissidents in Mexico and Saudi Arabia. So this lawsuit isn't a first for the NSO Group, but it is a first for WhatsApp. Do we know why WhatsApp sued NSO Group and what could have been some of WhatsApp's motivations?
The most obvious motivation would be to flip the narrative, right? The story was there is this terrible, terrible flaw in WhatsApp. Now the story is there is this company called NSO Group that was doing terrible things by exploiting a flaw in WhatsApp, right? So they do a little bit of jiu-jitsu on the messaging. It also puts pressure on this company to be more accountable about how its products are used. There's no question about that. You know, to have your name in the Wall Street Journal as a company whose technology has been used to spy on human rights activists and journalists, nobody wants that.
The NSO Group has said that its software was, quote, not designed or licensed for use against human rights activists and journalists, and that, quote, every contract with our customers requires them to fully comply with all national security and privacy laws and regulations. But the fact that the NSO Group even exists in the first place, not to mention its alleged involvement in this particular hack, illustrates how the arms race between governments and tech companies is intensifying. Because as tech companies keep making phones and messages harder to get into, and as governments keep trying to hack into those harder-to-get-into phones, third parties like the NSO Group see a business opportunity.
Not everybody can afford to stand up a tailored access operations group, right? Like a private top-tier hacking group costs you millions and millions of dollars to develop. There are only a handful of countries that have that capability. So these private actors have popped up to kind of meet the need for the less affluent. Companies like NSO are going to continue to build products and sell to people. What's unclear is the kinds of restrictions they'll put on their use or whether they'll put restrictions on their use. I mean, there will always be somebody who will sell to governments that really want to spy on activists and journalists. I think that market is too lucrative to go away.
So while this lawsuit could be a new tactic to deter companies from developing this type of software, it doesn't mean that hacking will go away. My other takeaway from this is that everybody's phone is hackable.
That, my friend, is true.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. No matter what device you have, it is hackable.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't built a hacker-proof device yet.
That's all for today, Friday, November 8th.
The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal.
And a quick disclosure, News Corp, the owner of The Wall Street Journal, has a commercial agreement to supply news through Facebook, which owns WhatsApp.
The Journal is hosted by me, Kate Linebaugh.
And me, Ryan Knudsen.
We're produced by Annie Minoff, Ricky Novetsky, Sarah Platt, and Willa Rubin. Our senior producer is Pia Gadkari.
Annie Rose Strasser is our supervising producer. Griffin Tanner is our engineer. Our executive producer is Gerard Cole.
Mixing this week by Sam Baer and Peter Leonard. Special thanks to Anthony Galloway.
Our theme music is by Haley Shaw. Additional music this week comes from Blue Dot Sessions and from Peter Leonard, Billy Libby, and Haley Shaw.
We're off Monday for Veterans Day. See you Tuesday afternoon.
Thanks for listening.